Welcome to the weekly. I'm Jeremy. And this week. I was going to introduce you. And there's no Chris. There's no problem. There's no Chris this week. And with me is a special guest host. And that would be Matt. Hello, Matt.
Hello, Jeremy.
Sorry, I guess we should have rehearsed. I needed to say there's no Chris at some point. But so this is our quarantine special because I am confined to the house for a week. And so there's no office, no lunchtime, no Chris. So Matt was kind enough to remotely guest host with me. So I appreciate it. Thank you very much, Matt.
You're welcome. I can bring the D&D hate, but I can't bring the Blade Runner hate.
Oh, that's right. That's right. We'll have to get in touch with Chris for hating on the Blade Runner. Yeah. So so a little bit different format this week. We're going to just have one topic and just kind of explore a few different things in that topic. And this week's topic will be Kickstarters. So just basically their general effect on the tabletop industry, good things that they're doing and bad things that they're doing. And we'll do that by taking a look at three currently active Kickstarters and just kind of compare the types of companies and the types of, I guess, you know, motivations and goals that they might have for being on Kickstarter. And as we talked about recently on the cast, now Kickstarter finally has some similar competition, at least in tabletop. GameFound is a new platform that was previously working only as a kind of a pledge manager, but they've officially launched now and they are tabletop only. So only role-playing games and board games and card games and things are on that platform. So they're trying to take a bite out of what is a very popular category on Kickstarter. So we'll see how that goes. So Matt, what is the last thing, the most recent thing that you've pledged on Kickstarter?
The most recent thing was Thunder Road, which is Renegade Games. Oh shoot!
Restoration
Games. Yes. Thank you.
Yes.
Of a very old Mad Max style, you know, car battle game. Mm-hmm. It looks like a hoot. I'm really excited to get that one.
Yeah, I've got Return to Dark Tower supposedly in the country. it's supposedly in Japan. So it's going to make it in the next week or so. It'll make it here. So I'm really interested to see the quality of their production because Restoration Games was kind of in competition for the HeroQuest license. And of course, Hasbro grabbed that away from them and Hasbro did a real poor job. Like the quality of their components and everything was really weak, you know, as they do, like as they, you know, basically do with their standard role play, board games that go to, you know, big box stores and things. So I guess it's not surprising, but I think Restoration would have done a much nicer job with that title. So
it would have turned it up to 11.
Yes. Yeah, I think so. And it's too bad because the artwork was very generic and a lot of tokens and things for the board that were printed only on one side. So you had like a white paper side and then a printed side. So that's very, you know, that's very Chutes and Ladders or Candyland or whatever. That's very a little too kiddie. So I was put off by that because they were charging a bit of a premium on their HasLab crowdfunder. Well, that's good. So have you pledged anything that went very far outside of tabletop? Is it mostly tabletop games and things that you've supported on crowdfunding?
It's mostly tabletop gaming. I have pledged for some fermentation jars. What can I say? I took a stab at fermenting things.
Nice. Yeah, there's such a huge variety. I mean, like people's like theater performances and books, and there's such a huge variety of things. But it seems like tabletop is a really strong category, and I think they've probably had better success because I know a lot of I've become very cautious of video games and, you know, PC game Kickstarter campaigns, because so many of those have, you know, run into, they just underestimated, you know, budgets that they would require for completing full, you know, full games. And so many of those have just disappeared. And that isn't so much the case with tabletop. And I don't know why, because there's like a physical component that has to, like, you know, go to a factory or go to a printer, you know, to be produced. So it's amazing that they've had so much success, like so much actually fulfilled, you know, projects compared to.
It seems like they probably get fulfilled more consistently, but mm-hmm. they probably delays are a big thing.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. I think there was like a 4 to 5 year Siege of the Citadel delay from that final wave. Yeah, it was actually, I think it was almost 5 years since they since they ran that Kickstarter until it was fulfilled. And I guess that explains why Modiphius doesn't deal with Mutant Chronicles anymore. But yeah, so it's a it's an interesting kind of a situation that we have right now, because I think we're in kind of a, you know, a golden age of tabletop, and there's a great, you know, OSR old school revival, and a lot of really great board games being produced. And so Kickstarter is a good way to not only promote, but, you know, get things funded that maybe would have trouble getting attention, or at least getting, you know, investment capital or bank loans, you know, to get them produced. So why don't we take a look? Let's see if I can get my scene to work here for all you audio listeners that have no idea what I'm doing. So let's take a quick look at a few of the active campaigns. All right. So one of the companies that seems to have a little bit of an addiction to Kickstarter that we've looked at in the past is Come On. And Come On now uses a company called 2LM Press, which is Two Little Mice Press, to design their all of their RPGs. So all of their RPGs are now being produced through 2LM. So that would be anything from like the Genesis system, and if they, I think still the Star Wars licenses, everything that they still have. Fantasy Flight. What else are they doing? Come On's got a lot of licenses. Yeah. I'm trying to think. That's not Genesis. Role playing. Yeah. Come On's role playing. They have a Zombicide. I think they have a Zombicide role playing game, and they're doing something else. Sorry, but 2LM is handling all of that. And so one of the things that they had success with previously was an RPG called Household. And I think it was originally, I think 2LM is an Italian studio. And originally this was produced in Italian and then I think translated to English. And they're doing a new edition of it now, a kind of a very, from the looks of it, a very deluxe edition on the website. So this was probably, you know, motivated by the success and kind of the reach that Come On has on Kickstarter, because I think all of their projects end up, you know, on the front page. They have a good relationship and have raised, you know, millions of dollars for Kickstarter. So they definitely got that attention. But as you can see, it's a pretty nice kind of deluxe release of this pre-existing game. And I think this game previously won some Ennies, like the first English translation of it won some Ennie awards. So the what's that
system?
Yeah, it's a D6 system. It's like a special dice D6 system. It's a kind of fun original system based on suits of playing cards. So the four suits of playing cards, and there's a like a Joker side to the dice, and then the four suits, and those all power the characteristics, the four kind of types of not only character abilities, but then specific skills. So it's not 5e or anything. It's an original system that they did. So if you don't know Come On, if you've been on Kickstarter, it's impossible to avoid them. They do a lot of, I guess, what you'd have to call Ameritrash board games. So board games with a ton of plastic, real bright and flashy stuff. They work with Eric M. Lang a lot as a designer. I think he's probably on staff, and he did a series of kind of the historical, kind of what you'd consider like historical periods, combat games. So there was a feudal Japan, a Viking theme, and then most recently an Egyptian themed game that were kind of area control combat games, but with a lot of miniatures, a lot of big, you know, big scale monsters and things. So that's what Come On is mostly known for. And recently they've had the Marvel license, and they've been doing a lot of licensed IP games, which they're bringing to Kickstarter. And that's something we should probably talk about when we talk about another campaign that's live now. But you know, it seems like the original intent, like I think Kickstarter started in like 2008, 2009. And their original intent was, you know, to give projects that wouldn't have a chance to be produced, a crowdfunding source. So people are pledging for a project that is hopefully going to be produced, that is, you know, to some degree on the way to being produced, and just needs kind of finishing funds. You know, it needs the money to print or money to pay artists or, you know, pay writers or whatever. So that helped a lot of smaller projects. And I think that got a lot of attention to smaller companies like Come On was, you know, in the beginning with the board games, give them a chance to produce things at a much higher level and present them to a much bigger audience. But now, now after the millions of dollars of success that Come On has had in a lot of their large scale board games, they're now moving into licensed IP games and still bringing those to Kickstarter. And maybe you're kind of addicted to that cycle because,
I feel like Come On is, medium and to large game companies are now using Kickstarter as really just their online store, marketing tool.
Right. Yeah. Kickstarter has plastered all over it. This is not a pre-order. This is not a pre-order, because they're saying they're not guaranteeing this thing is ever going to be produced. But I think a lot of companies that have had success on the platform are now just seeing it as a good way to get some numbers before they go to the factory to have an idea about how many units to produce. So unfortunately, I think that's overshadowing and kind of pushing out of the way a lot of smaller projects. And it's not like Kickstarter is like a zero sum game. It's not like if you give your money to Come On, no one is going to give it to a smaller project. But still, you know, all of the stuff is still out there, and especially smaller projects also usually have smaller price tags. So it's not like that's a finite amount of resources, but still the promotion and the attention that you can get on the Kickstarter page, I think would be better served. Like if you've already made $1 million on your campaign, I don't think we need to advertise it anymore on the front page of Kickstarter. I think you consider yourself a success and can pay for your own marketing at that point. But
I was going to ask, do you know, are the Kickstarters, are they able to pay more prominence on the web page?
I'm not sure, how that works, because I know that they have their top picks. So, Kickstarter pretends or kind of like has this like unbiased way that they seem to have their editors pick things, but it could be a pay to play kind of situation. I think though it does depend on popularity, but and unfortunately, I guess the incentive would be for Kickstarter to support larger projects, because so how the system works, if you've never gone anywhere near Kickstarter, so it's a crowdfunding platform where a project is launched, they set a goal price, and then they have these pledge levels for different types of rewards. And the more successful and the further over their goal they get, sometimes they'll do things like stretch goals, which means they'll add things to a project. And so they get this large amount of money that is usually after 30 days. It's usually like a month that these projects run. Sometimes it can be shorter, like 7 or 14 days if it's a real, real small kind of rapid turnaround project. So then the money is collected, Kickstarter takes 5%, and then their credit card processor takes another 3 to 5%. So 10% of that money is already gone from the creator. They get that transferred to them, and then they can, you know, work on actually producing the project. But, you know, many things can go wrong before then, and it's basically best effort. Like the terms that they put it in is the company that's presenting these Kickstarter projects has to put forth their best effort and kind of just genuinely try to do something and produce regular updates. They have to kind of regularly update people on the situation. So there have been some projects that have gone very far south or have been not really well planned, and they were just hoping to make enough money to then decide what they were going to do for the projects themselves. But luckily Tabletop seems to be a little more immune to that. There's a lot more good faith, and the communities seem to sniff out bad projects a little bit faster. If you've ever been in the comment section of a Kickstarter, you'll know how vicious they can be. But a lot of times that serves to call, BS on projects that don't seem to be going anywhere or don't seem to know what they're doing. So that I've seen a lot of canceled projects. So a company can, in the middle of this campaign, just say, okay, yeah, this isn't going to happen, or something is wrong. There's like a legal problem or something that they hadn't sorted out already. So they'll cancel a project, and then everybody just, doesn't get charged anything. But and another one of the aspects is, so it's credit card. It's basically like everyone is pledging on a credit card, and that's why Stripe is involved and gets their little piece, because they process all of Kickstarter's credit card charges. But that also means that restricts a lot of people in different countries to being able to participate. So Kickstarter has kind of region limitations, and even a lot of pledges, or I'm sorry, a lot of campaigns will even specifically say, we don't allow people from these areas to back our projects. But the credit cards also make that something that's much more limiting. So compared to some other platforms, I think Kickstarter isn't as open as it could be. But you have this these companies that are regularly, like Come On, these companies that are regularly on the platform and produce high quality stuff. But I think without this platform, they would have much smaller much smaller catalogs.
So Come On's quality is phenomenal. Mm-hmm. I played them. I don't think I've ever owned one, but I've played some of their games, and their quality is tremendous.
Mm.
But they are making so much money, you're just kind of like, what is this for?
Yeah, right. And it's almost like, because of the way that the money's dispersed, like at the end of these projects, and then you've got, maybe like a year or whatever of production, it almost seems like some of these companies want to get back on Kickstarter as soon as possible, so that they're actually, like, the funds that they're actually receiving, they're still funding their previous project with. So they get on this this kind of treadmill that gets them addicted to this platform, because they want to produce these high quality projects, and maybe don't quite have the money. And another thing that does seem to keep coming up, especially for smaller projects, is shipping. And shipping prices have changed a lot. So some of the failure, or some of the, maybe there's a successful Kickstarter, but as far as a financial investment for the company, they end up being a very minor, or sometimes a loss for the company, is when they don't correctly estimate like what it's going to cost to ship things out. I think that because you're shipping internationally, you're open to a pretty big market, even using the Stripe credit card service. Yeah, I think of that money that you lose the 10% of, you probably then lose almost another 50% just to get those things actually shipped to where they're supposed to be. So I think first time companies run into some pretty shocking postage bills. So what's that?
Failure. One of the legendary Kickstarter failures is the Ogre game by Steve Jackson.
Right. Mm-hmm.
I think that was, I don't remember what year that was now, but it's been a while.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, you know, you were talking about tabletop gamers being a little more on top of the companies that are putting out products. And I think it's because a lot of people learned hard lessons early on.
Mm-hmm.
Ogre, I think, almost killed Steve Jackson Games.
Wow. Yeah. So, that's definitely a possibility. So what happened, remind people or like let people know that don't know about that project. What happened? Like, was it bloat? Was it like a stretch goal bloat or yeah?
It was. And the box and everything that they added to it became so titanically huge that the shipping was just insane.
Right.
And it took them forever to fulfill because they just weren't prepared.
Mm-hmm.
Such a massive thing. I think a lot of companies learned from Jackson stepping on that landmine for them. You know?
Wow. Yeah, I've noticed that with a lot of recent Steve Jackson stuff. They say U.S. shipping only, maybe like, you know, U.S. and Canada shipping only. So they're not even going to go into the international shipping game, which probably at this point, because it's so unpredictable, the prices are so unpredictable, is probably a good step. They still do international shipping from their web store. So if you wait for things, like you can't pledge things, but if you're international, I've actually bought things from their, warehouse 23. I bought things from them and they do ship internationally. The shipping rates are crazy, but you can get them. But yeah, I think they definitely, yeah, did learn once they made a coffin size box of Ogre that you weren't going to be able to send that anywhere. Yeah,
that was pre resin minis, you know. So
oh yeah,
I think I might be wrong, but I'm pretty sure it was all metal.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, you know, the shipping probably just was 10 times worse.
Yeah. That's true. Wow. Yeah. So yeah, that is and they're not they're not a company that's new to mail order or anything. They've been around forever. So, that's surprising. And I guess it's just because, you know, they were enjoying the enthusiasm and the, you know, funds that were coming in and just not predicting that, yeah, this was actually going to be a physically impossible task. Wow. All right, let's take a look at another campaign. Ah, there we go. So the Blade Runner campaign. So Free League, who I had a lot of respect for because when they launched their Alien RPG, they didn't go to Kickstarter. They relied on the strength of the IP. They just, you know, did a pre-order for that game system and just released it on their web store and then through retail. You could get it, you know, through Amazon or whatever as it came out for retail. But Blade Runner, which I would think is an equally popular IP, is on Kickstarter. So what are your thoughts about that, Matt?
Well, my first thought was why?
Mm-hmm.
And I felt shame because I knew I was going to back it anyway.
Right.
they got me. Damn it. They know they got me. Then I watched, they did a live stream. Mm-hmm. Free League is very good about their communication. And they did a live stream where they talked to the writer and I can't remember his name. One of the lead guys at Free League.
Mm-hmm.
And they did do a question and answer from fans. One of the questions was, so why are we putting this on Kickstarter?
Mm-hmm.
And the short sum it up kind of answer was, well, we love our Kickstarter community and it's a lot of fun. It's like, yeah, it's also $1.4 million so far.
Right. That's fun too. It's even more in Swedish crowns. Yeah.
I would love to see the licensing agreement. I'm curious if like there's stuff going on behind the scenes where like, oh yeah, you need to make this much money or else.
Yeah. Right. I think they to guarantee the success. Yeah. To guarantee numbers. I think, going to Kickstarter was probably their best choice. And I guess, you know, in these times of, you know, a little bit more uncertainty, supply chain issues, because it's not like Free League has been free of problems. They've had delays. Like there's a Forbidden Lands book that's been delayed. They had a printing problem. And Matt is suffering that delay. And they had a printing problem with their dice, their custom dice for the One Ring. And they didn't handle that very well as far as replacing those dice. Yeah, it's interesting that they are doing this. And this is my criticism. Like we were just talking about Kuman, and this is my criticism of them taking, you know, Marvel comics or Hellboy or, you know, a lot of like established characters. Even I think it's Walking Dead. And there was a lot of things, or no, that's somebody else is doing Walking Dead, but there's a lot of IPs. I got to get my Kuman straight. There's a lot of IPs that make it to Kickstarter, and they have such a built-in audience that even if people don't know what this thing is, I like this IP, so you know I will support this this game. You get a lot of that, and so Blade Runner has definitely, you know, benefited from that. I'm sure there's. I think I've even seen. I read through the comments a little bit, and I've seen people that have said I've never played a tabletop role playing game. Hopefully, this will be my first one that I play. It's like, okay, but I guess though,
a good system.
yeah, and the books themselves, you know, have a lot of lore. You know, they collect a lot of the lore of or you know what they've licensed. So this is the setting for this game is between the two films. So they fleshed out a little bit. There's been some animated shorts of what happened between these two films. And I think there was like a prequel animation to get you ready for 2049. And none of it's very good. I don't like anything that happened personally. I don't like anything that happened between those movies.
Black Lotus, is that what that one is?
Yes, called? Right, yeah. Right. Yeah, so you can find those. Yeah, okay. you can find those online and... So I don't know how interesting that world is going to be to play in, but if you are familiar with recent Kickstarters that they've done, like the One Ring, this campaign looks very familiar. So it's going to be a core book, but then they're also doing a starter set. And so it's just a way to, you know, to immediately play, which is, it's a little odd to like have those things together. I think it worked okay. With the One Ring, but it gave you, you're only playing hobbits, you know, basically in the starter set for the One Ring.
On their Q&A, they kind of talked about that, the starter set in the book.
Mm-hmm.
And part of the reason is because they're really emphasizing this investigation system in mm-hmm. the game, which I'm pretty excited to check out.
Mm-hmm.
But part of that is actual, photographic evidence.
Right.
And they said we needed a box to put that.
Yeah. That's true. Cause a book with, if you need so many accessories, like so many actual props for the tabletop, yeah, you can't just put that in a core book, or you can't just give people a PDF and expect them to be happy. Yeah. Cause as you can see on this page, there is a huge amount of, cards, images of the NPCs, and then all of these files and maps and things. So, and the one thing that I was surprised by, and this is not specifically related to Kickstarter, this is more of a Year Zero engine. I was surprised that they aren't sticking to D6s anymore. When I think Year Zero, I'm like, yeah, D6. But I guess after their experience with Twilight 2000, they thought so rolling fewer dice, it would fit Blade Runner better. So you're not going to roll handfuls of D6s. So it's a D6, a D8, a D10, and D12. And that's enough swing. And so I guess similar to like Cortex Prime, or, you know, your like your level, the sided die that you use depends on your level. So if you know you have a D8 and something, you know you're a little bit more proficient than D6. So that seems to come, mm-hmm. yeah.
Little Savage Worlds, like.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Because your attributes, at least in Twilight 2000, your attribute will have a die and your skill will have a die.
Mm-hmm.
You'll check both dice. You get a 6 to succeed, so 8s are better at that, 10s are even better, and 12s are the best.
Right.
And I believe if you get 10, 11, or 12, it counts as multiple successes.
Mm.
That's pretty fun.
Yeah, yeah. So I think that'll work well. I was just surprised. Surprised we're moving away from D6s. I thought that was their bread and butter. And of course, on the Kickstarter itself, you see that they're doing a limited edition cover. So again, they're doing some faux leather and some holographic foil to give you to add $50 to the price of the exact same book. I don't think anyone's going to be able to beat the Modiphius doing the artisanal leather bound Dune rulebook, yeah, for what, $750, whatever. So no one's going to beat that. So everything else sounds reasonable after that. But yeah, so yeah, this looked very familiar to their other campaigns, and it seems pretty limited. All, you know, even though they have almost 1.5 million, they're still not, you know, to any significant stretch goals that are going to add much expense to the production of the game. It's just, you know, an additional character class and another set of dice. They didn't go completely out of control with scaling things up.
Is still just one starting adventure, or did they add more?
I think there's still just the one. Yeah, the Electric Dreams one, I think, is the only thing that I've seen mentioned. Yeah, as far as I've seen, they've just added a little bit more. Like, there's like newspaper handouts and things that more physical goods that are going to be in that starter box. So I guess, though, that starter box can get pretty full, and that thing's going to have to go to retail. So that'll be interesting. They may actually, the retail price of that box may actually have to increase just because of the production. Yeah, but one of the things that, I think the last thing that got unlocked was like manila envelopes with the actual agency logos, the LAPD logo and things on them.
Oh, nice.
So you can hide things. Yeah. So a lot more. And that was something that I kind of unconsciously did when we played the Alien RPG, as I covered the table with props, because my image of Alien was kind of the dinner scene, you know, so after so there's just a bunch of stuff around the table, and so I just kind of covered the table with props, and a lot of the players, like, you know, kind of got drawn or attached to a specific thing, and I think it helped a little bit with role play. So this might do that same sort of thing when you're like opening files and, like, you know, flipping through photos. That's going to feel very investigator like and so may help with the session to feel more immersive, because you're going to actually have physical things to hold in your hands. Oh, yeah, and it
helps.
What's that?
I was just going to say it helps with everyone's suspension of disbelief and mm-hmm. getting into the feel of it. And it's a fairly smooth system, so I think the game will get out of the way a lot, I hope.
Mm. Yeah, I think so. And the illustrator, they're using Martin Grip again for the, just his, beautiful digital art for everything. So I like his character portraits and stuff. They're evocative enough, but not too detailed. You know, that they're more like digital oil paintings. So they work well to suggest things. Yeah. So yeah, this is very similar. And there is everything you can see on the screen. There's all of their previous projects, and so a lot of those that were original IPs, original settings that Freely created, went to Kickstarter. But Alien didn't, you know, so Alien they thought was strong enough. But now they're back. So yeah, I'm surprised. And they still have quite a few days. So I wonder how high this is going to get as far as, totals.
Again, my $100 or whatever.
Right. Yeah. And they're still working on fulfilling some other projects. Yeah, so this was interesting. This was kind of a disappointment because it also means that, you know, we're not going to get it. We probably would have gotten it sooner if it would have just gone to a pre-order, and we would have gotten PDFs right away, which I think they are guaranteeing at the end of this Kickstarter they are going to ship PDFs.
They're good about that.
Yeah. So I think that's that would be good. And of course, everything, once it's in retail, everything shows up on Drive-Thru as well. And they look like they're supporting not only Foundry, but Roll20 for their virtual assets as well. So that's even a little bit more.
I had 22,000 copies very late.
Mm-hmm.
And it was because of their distributor in the U.S., the company called Funnigan.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought for sure, because they got a lot of flack for that, I thought for sure they would drop Funnigan, but apparently they're still using it.
Oh, wow. Yeah, that was something I was surprised by. I did an unboxing, I think, of an Awakened Realms game, and those always arrive, I think, because we get them like directly from Poland in Japan. So those always arrive really well packed and in pristine condition. And I was talking about that on the live stream. And somebody put in the comments, yeah, in North America, we got these bashed and battered boxes that were just, you know, really poorly poorly put together, and a lot of stuff showed up damaged. So people's experiences, you know, just based on the fulfillment centers or fulfillment companies are going to widely vary. And I think companies have to be very careful about that because, yeah, like you're saying, the Funnigan screwing things up is going to, that reflects on Free League. Like you don't, oh, damn you, Funnigan. No, you're thinking Free League. Free League screwed this up. Yeah. Yeah. So we'll see how this goes and how this fulfills it. It looks really fun. I mean, the system itself and everything looks really fun and it looks very immersive, but I hope this doesn't mean that Free League is on Kickstarter no matter what the project is. You know, I can understand them wanting to gauge popularity of an original thing that they're offering or something that they're translating from Swedish or something, but I'm not interested in seeing another big IP that they could want to produce a game for. But yeah, this is very odd. But similar though, there's something similar though to Alien, because it is already becoming kind of a strange, you know, fractured setting. Like there's films that, even though they're sequels or, you know, things that they're doing that are prequels or whatever in between, the lore and everything is a little bit odd. So similar to Alien, with like having to figure out Prometheus and Alien Covenant somehow working within those movies.
You have fractured fan base too. Mm. Like you're going to get this situation with games like these where you have some hardcore role players are going to make it whatever they want to make it. Mm-hmm. And you have new people who are going to want it to fit their image of that property. Mm-hmm. And if it doesn't, those people are just going to check out.
Yeah, well, that's true. And that's in this like newer generation of very elaborately produced games. Like there's so much illustration and so, you know, so much artwork and so much goes into producing this. It does already kind of tell you, yeah, we're looking at the, you know, the 80s movie. Like that is our inspiration for this. And if you want to play the 2000, if you want to play, you know, 2049, that's, you know, it's not going to be, it's not going to be like this. So, you know, previously when there would be an IP, there would just be a few like screenshots from the movie or a few like, you know, line illustrations. And so you wouldn't be pushed, you know, one way or another in, you know, so if there's a movie purist or, you know, somebody, the role-playing game itself wouldn't tell you that specifically. It would only be the mechanics maybe that would suggest anything that you might not like. But yeah, now that there's such rich production in these games, yeah, they definitely are saying, this is what it looks like, this is what it feels like. So yeah, I think that can turn some people off or not be what they want. But once it gets to the tabletop, it's whatever you want it to be. So that's the good thing. You can redraw all of that NPC art.
This is probably a better topic for a different discussion, mm-hmm. but I feel like we've highlighted this before, but the new generation of role players mm-hmm. aren't really given that tool set to just unbox it and make it what they want. They're expecting it all to be laid out for them.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. So
it's tough. They're trying to please two very different groups, I think.
No, I think that's a good point. There are people that are just going to be looking at the game mechanics and thinking, what can I do with this? Is this the kind of game that I want to play? And there's other people that are like, okay, what's step one? You know, especially with a starter box and things, you know, you're going to be like, okay, so let's go through character creation. It's 11 steps. And that is true. And I wonder if that comes from, just more, you know, if you learned kind of role playing and things from PC role, you know, PC RPGs, then you have a more, the game, you know, always those games are popping up tutorial windows and saying, if you hold down the shift key, your fireball will, you know, it's like, so maybe a little bit of that kind of conditioning, you know, people coming from that once they just get a book, it's like, okay, what am I supposed to do with this? You know, where do I start?
Or, you know, if you're coming in D&D like so many people are, it's, you know, okay, level one, I can do these things, and here mm-hmm. it is, what time I can do it, how many times I can do it. Mm-hmm. It's all very regimented, mm-hmm. I guess, is what I'm saying.
Yeah, no, I think that's a good point. And yeah, it'll, and hopefully as they, get more gaming experience, they'll start demanding more, or you know, wanting to, you know, make it their own a little bit more. So hopefully we'll see that. And you do see a lot with I guess it's more, I'm thinking of it more in the kind of OSR space, but so many people you know, contributing and coming up with new settings or character classes or whatever to games that are out there. So the community does, you know, develop a lot of things to do that can, you know, adjust the game to a little bit more of specifically what, you know, people want to play or want to see. All right, so let's take a look. Our last Kickstarter. Let me see if I can get there. There we go. So this is one that we've been waiting for. It's almost 6 months we've been waiting for this Kickstarter, and it is finally here. So we've mentioned it on the cast a few times, but Warzone Eternal, so Res Nova's Warzone Eternal campaign has launched. And it's within the first day, I think, or close to that, it hit its $50,000 goal. So this is a new company producing, you know, they license the IP to a classic, you know, 90s miniatures war game, and set a pretty modest goal to produce things. But you can see in the scale of the campaign itself that everything is kind of modest, like what they're offering. Like even if you pledged everything in the whole Kickstarter, it's not physically that much stuff. So they're starting small to kind of scale up this world as the original game did. I mean, if you looked at the original Warzone, like even in the book, there weren't miniatures produced for a lot of units that were in the original rule book. So this is not unusual for what you could expect for doing this. But I think after we've had Come On and you know, some other companies come out so big with, you know, throwing so much plastic at you and so many, you know, fancy deluxe rule books and stuff, a campaign like this with a new company is having trouble, you know, getting the traction that I think it would have if this project was released by, you know, someone with a bigger Kickstarter presence. So when I'm talking about things being overshadowed by these like multi-million dollar Kickstarters, this is the kind of thing that I think suffers, because there are people that had followed this project like on the Facebook group and whatever from the beginning on social media. And now that they're seeing it actually on Kickstarter, when it's in the context of Kickstarter, people are like, where's all the stretch goals and where's the faux leather deluxe rule book? And, you know, people are really expecting a lot and really need to, you know, to be excited. You know, they constantly need but we got to get to this, you know, this 72 millimeter miniature.
Maybe shock troopers don't glow in the dark.
right. Yeah. So I think, it's a shame that, this is the, situation. So I think the all in pledge is, I think it's like 300, like everything that they're producing for this Kickstarter is $325, but it's not a huge amount of plastic. Like that would be, you know, a coffin size, you know, shipping box of, you know, a board game, a Kickstarter add-ons and, you know, expansions from Come On that would almost be, you know, half your body weight if it came in the mail. And this is going to be, you know, a more modest, you know, five like unit boxes. So it's a shame that the expectations are so different, and hopefully with new platforms like GameFound, or if there's even, you know, if like itch.io or somebody else or Indiegogo becomes a more, you know, popular space for board games and miniature games, we can see projects like this like have the appropriate amount of the expectations will be a little more correctly adjusted, because I think that's what Res Nova is dealing with now, is people in the comments going, where's the whiz bang, you know, wowie kazowie, because that's what Kickstarter is now. And just things like you know, they're not going into the production of doing like custom dice for every faction, and you know, a custom measuring tape included in and there's not even a starter box. Like they're just doing like individual unit boxes. So I think for Kickstarter that has a lot of people trying to pledge things confused. So it almost seems like Kickstarter does need to do a like an indie and a pro, or you know, some sort of distinction, you know, where they can say this is going to be over $1 million. So you know, we're not going to hold these two campaigns side by side and let you choose between them, because you should know that this is not on the same scale. So
part of the reason I was asking about if I could pay for moving up on the page was I did a little experiment on Warzone.
Mm-hmm.
I went to Kickstarter, because first of all, I go to Kickstarter, obviously with the algorithm, it's like, hey, here's a bunch of games. You like games.
Mm-hmm.
Warzone was not there.
Oh.
So I did a little experiment, and I just keyword searched war games.
Mm-hmm.
Not there.
Interesting. For
miniatures, it was about 20 down.
Wow.
So something's going on with the algorithm, or mm-hmm. how... I don't know if they set up like keywords or pick branches like eBay where this should appear in these areas.
Mm-hmm.
You know, or if there is a thing Kickstarter doesn't talk about where you can spend money to get
right
prominence. But they're probably suffering because of that. I mean,
yeah, my
whole algorithm knows I like games, and it was nowhere to be seen, you know.
Interesting, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I wonder, Resnova, Alex from Resnova did say that they hired a consultant. So that's the consultant helped them with like the timing of the launch and everything. So you'd think that they would have let them know, yeah, and if you want to give us a few bucks, we can probably put you on the front page. I'm wondering, though, if the algorithm, it's just like, you know, how much money is going into a certain project, you know, gets it promoted. So I'm sure it's more of like a snowball effect. The more successful and the faster your project is increasing, probably the more prominence it's getting.
That yeah. would be unfortunate.
And yeah.
Kind of counter to what you're talking about. Mm-hmm. Of them maybe doing like an indie backing mm-hmm. kind of thing. I was thinking it might be views, but
yeah, you're right. Yeah, that could be.
I don't know.
Yeah,
I don't know.
Yeah, I wonder what it is that creates the creates that. And I know like someone in the comments was encouraging people to go to ClickTrack, I guess, or KickTrack or something like that.
Tracker,
but so the page that kind of monitors the campaign gives you stats about the growth and you know, and if something's likely to successfully hit their goals or not. So I think popularity on there as well gets more visibility on that page, at least if people are looking at it. Yeah. So it's very strange, but I guess though, if they did start to, you know, divide projects into different categories or, you know, amounts of funding, then that may change people's perception anyhow. So you may even get less visibility. You know, it's probably better to be a small project and just get whatever you can out of the regular algorithm and promotion than it would be to be, oh, you're in the indie ghetto. And well, some people look there, but most people don't. Yeah. You might like actually lose like, you know, 25% of your potential pledges just because like, oh, I don't shop indie. You know, I don't pledge indie.
Oh, wow. Miniature snob.
Yeah, right. Yeah, yeah.
Well, we weren't talking about Warhammer. I think maybe also what they suffer from is just ad space in general, being mm-hmm. able to fund that, you know, because it's in advance of the Kickstarter, being able to front money for ads, because I didn't, again, algorithm. Mm-hmm. My Instagram algorithm is all about games as
mm-hmm.
well.
Mm-hmm.
And it was not until I did a Google search of some Warzone stuff, and then I went to Instagram. It was the first time I saw a Warzone ad.
Wow.
Uh-huh. So, yeah, I know that with Instagram, Facebook, they can push out their ads for money to target it, kind of like direct mail. And maybe they can't afford to do that. So it's kind of like screwed when you're new.
Yeah, and this is their first campaign. So as opposed to Come On and Free League, who have had like a decade of crowdfunding experience, this is Resnova's very first Kickstarter campaign. So I think they've got a learning curve. And just like we saw with Chronopia crowdfunding, what they originally launched with, people were like, "What? I'm confused. How do I get this? How do I do this?" And they kept evolving the campaign page and offering different pledges and things to satisfy people. So hopefully ResNova will kind of do that same thing and make it more clear and give people, like, even if it's not technically a starter box with, like groovy graphics on the front that say two-player starter box, they can have a pledge level that's two-player starter box. This is everything you're going to need. Here's your counters. Here's your, two boxes of units and the book, and maybe two copies of the book, and you're ready to go. So hopefully they'll do something like that, because there's expectations that are kind of built into these things. And I guess even like whatever the size of your project, you still have to anticipate those expectations that people have. Oh, so what in one box is everything that I need to play? That's very often with war games. That's, what people have expectations for. And then even though it is an established IP, and they probably went into it thinking, we're going to separate everything out because everybody has their own, their old faction that they used to play. They're going to want to buy those, or they're going to get in on that. So we don't want to offer a starter box with two fixed factions that maybe aren't going to be the most popular. So that might've been based on like older game. Cause I think the company and the people that are working on this are fans of the old game. So they're coming at it, not from what is the fresh new player going to need and how are they going to look at this game. They're coming at it like, we're bringing back a classic, and everyone that's excited about that, which is obviously, I mean, they hit their goal in the first day. So obviously there's, a built-in fandom of the IP. So they had success with that, but now is when they need to bring the new people in, the people that are like, what's Warzone? I thought that was Call of Duty or whatever video game has that. That's another, Warzone is a tough Google search because there's so many video games using that name. But yeah, so there's
I'm surprised Warzone is Call of Duty, right?
I think so.
I'm surprised they didn't come after him.
Right. Yeah, hopefully it's generic enough that, and I think it's so much older than most video games. Yeah, I think it's like late 80s, early 90s.
Companies don't care.
Yeah, that's true. We've got more money. How long do you want to fight this? Yeah. Yeah, that's really true.
I feel, because you interviewed them and you know so much about the background, do you get the sense that they did a good guerrilla marketing campaign? Like, were they on Reddit? Were they on Twitter? Were they on Board Game Geek? Do you think they were doing all the hard stuff?
Yeah, I not so much. I think because they were a little hesitant because I think they were still putting things together. So I think Warzone was a little bit more cautious than Chronopia was. Chronopia was just out there, and they just flooded. Everybody got a demo set of Chronopia. Like, they flooded a resin set of playable minis out there. So many channels were talking about it. So many people were painting them, and they even included the community's videos on their page. And Chronopia had a little bit of a longer haul. Like, it took them almost to the end of the campaign to get funded, but their enthusiasm was really great. And their Facebook community was a bit smaller, but much friendlier, much more, everyone was really kind to each other and wasn't like, what the hell is this? And you're ruining my game. And Warzone's got a little bit more of that. I guess, like, there must be some threshold where, like, you're just popular enough, you're just big enough that the trolls are like, there's a line where that you cross where in come the trolls and in come the people that are just going to stir up trouble because of, they have some very fixed idea of what this project should be. So Warzone suffered a little bit from that because right away on the Facebook group, they were warning people about being toxic and not being constructive in their criticism. And I didn't see any of that on Chronopia. But of course, Chronopia ended up being a smaller project. But I don't know. It's difficult because I think you do have to have, and maybe they missed, like you're saying, I think they were out there a little bit more last year, kind of generating some of that buzz. And so by the time the campaign finally launched, they might have lost a little of that crest of enthusiasm, because people were really expecting, because they talked about a December Kickstarter campaign. ResNova was talking about possibly end of the year. And so people were, you know, really primed for that. And it just, you know, because we're, it was still pandemic conditions and everything, I think they just decided to let's wait and see, and, you know, wait and get, you know, more miniatures painted, more, you know, rules finished. And so we have more to show. And so they may have, the wave crested and it was kind of, you know, receding back into the ocean when they finally were able to launch the Kickstarter.
Well, yeah. The shiny thing, it appeared, distracted everyone.
Right. Yeah, right. Yeah, it's got to be really crazy to try to figure out timing for launching a Kickstarter, because you don't want to run up. I mean, you know, they're running up against Blade Runner. You know, they're running up against a huge free league. And if, like, if you've got $100 you're going to spend on your hobby, you know, over these next couple of months, you know, you are going to be choosing between the two. So, yeah.
Yeah, there's probably, whenever Kaman's getting close to a Kickstarter release, all the other game companies have probably got a circle on their calendar, like, we don't do anything
in this period,
you know?
Yeah, yeah, at least during that, yeah, that initial, like, you know, launch week or whatever. Mm-hmm. And now that they're bringing, you know, big IPs to Kickstarter, that's not fair. Because of course you're going to see, you know, Marvel Comics or Star Wars or whatever, and you're going to say, oh, what's this all about? And it's just got, you know, it's got such a built-in, like I was saying with Blade Runner, people are just, oh, Blade Runner, I'm going to buy that because I like Blade Runner. I don't know what tabletop role play is, but yeah, I don't know.
Pictures, bro.
Yeah, right. yeah, so we'll see. We've still got a long time for Warzone, so we'll see how ultimately they do. And the nice thing, anybody that's looking at this project, the thing to keep in mind, this is all domestically produced in the US. So if you're in the US, the fulfillment and shipping and everything is going to be insanely reasonable. They're not going to have to deal with any sort of, I mean, they're not even dealing with Eastern Europe, or, you know, which is probably already difficult, as difficult as China is. But yeah, they're not dealing with anything. So it's COCAS that's being produced domestically in the US, and even all of their printing is being done in the US.
That alone should attract some seasoned Kickstarter backers.
Yes. You know? Yeah, that have seen things just get hung up. And always, especially with Kaman and some of the bigger board game companies, always you have the, well, we're trying to get this in before the Chinese New Year, but it doesn't look like it's going to happen. So you're going to have to wait another month. Yeah. The Chinese New Year is always that bomb in the middle of February, like end of January, early February, that ruins your delivery date. Yeah. Too many big holidays in China. With those factors.
An occasional lockdown.
Yeah, right. And occasionally whole cities just get frozen. Oh, yeah, that's crazy. But so I thought these three examples were an interesting range of kind of what's going on. It would give us some, you know, opportunity to talk about different approaches and things. And I think overall for the tabletop industry, Kickstarter has been good. It may have picked some winners it shouldn't have. You know, it may have made some kingmaker. It may have been a kingmaker inappropriately to companies like Kaman. but overall, I think it's gotten us, you know, better quality, bigger productions, maybe bigger projects and bigger productions than we would have gotten had things and you know, actual physical books. I think a lot of companies would probably have already shifted to just digital only, you know, just to avoid all of the nightmares of, you know, shipping and fulfillment and everything, if there was no such thing as Kickstarter. But any final thoughts? Do you see it as a bane or a boon to tabletop?
Kickstarter, I liken to the internal combustion engine. I need it. Mm-hmm. It definitely pushed society forward, but I know there's a better way.
right. Yeah.
So I try not to use internal combustion engines when I can, but mm-hmm. occasionally you got to do what you got to do. And Kickstarter is the same way. Like, mm-hmm. I'm usually not using it, but then Blade Runner shows up and, oh, man.
yeah.
No, a double-edged sword. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and hopefully, people seeing the success, there's going to be competitors, and the competitors will give us a more satisfying, more satisfying solutions and be able to serve, you know, communities better. And the one thing I think we talked about a little bit in the preamble. So if you're a patron, you've already heard a little bit of this, but we were talking about Kickstarter flirting with crypto, you know, blockchain and NFTs, and that being something that turned people off incredibly. There were companies that actually said, if you're doing this, we're canceling our projects because we don't want to get involved. And I think, you know, maybe from their naive perspective, we're looking at it as a way to open up the platform. You know, if you can pay with cryptocurrency, then that opens it up to anyone. You could be in North Korea and pledge on Kickstarter. But I don't know if you're ever going to get anything shipped to you. But yeah, you can actually, have access to the platform. But yeah, I don't know. So they're still in, I think, the deciding stage of that. But we'll see if they're going to be kind of swept away in this, kind of rush for new technology or new ways to monetize things on the platform. Who knows? But yeah, so I think that just about covers it. So please leave us some questions in the comments either below this video or wherever you're listening to this podcast, whatever podcast player you listen to, whatever platform, and let us know your feelings on Kickstarter, like what you really feel is good or bad about it, and what it's done, the effects that it's had on the industry as a whole. So I want to thank you very much, Matt, for joining me this week and filling Chris's shoes virtually.
<My pleasure.
laughs> I keep saying virtually, just remotely. But yeah, I should be out of quarantine early next week, so hopefully Friday will be a normal weekly. And this was a little bit of a single subject discussion with Matt and I, and you may see more of that in the future. We have plans, we have things we're thinking about. So thank you, Matt, and thanks to everyone for tuning in. Is there anything you want to promote, Matt? Any where can people find you on the internet? Is there any place you'd like to be found?
I'm on Twitter, at Hargald, HAARGALD. Mm-hmm. And you can check out Friend or Foe on DriveThruRPG.
Excellent. Very good. Yeah. I'll put a link to that and also the Twitter on this video so you can find Matt. And you can always find Matt in the chat, usually for this live stream as well. So Matt is a regular viewer of the live stream. So thanks. Yeah. Thanks very much for always being there. It's a lot of fun.
No problem.
All right. So upturntable.com is the website for everything, and UpturnTable on social media. If you're a patron, you can get the audio from this live stream. And when we talk to the chat after we finish the main discussion, you can get that all on the RSS feed for Patreon. And you can also join by clicking the join button below and become a YouTube member. And that'll even give you access to the Discord, which is still under construction. and also there is a Patreon. So patreon.com/upturntable, and become a weakling to support this show specifically and let us know what you'd like to see more of. So thanks so much for joining us, and we'll see you again next week. Goodbye.